The Art of Compromise. Precision, you dolts! Filio leapt from his bench to yell at the two swordsmen, their steels drooping as they gaped at him. Speed is nothing but faff and bluster without precision. He was in his late 50s, but quick and handsome still. Vic might have had more grey in her hair than he did. He dropped back beside her, muttering a few more Styrian curses under his breath before switching to common. Young men these days, eh? They expect the world served to them with golden cutlery. Vic glanced over at Tallow. He looked like he might never have seen cutlery, let alone been served with the golden kind. Even dressed smartly in practicals black, he reminded her of her brother. That apologetic hunching of the shoulders, as if he was always expecting a slap. Some have to handle hardship, she said.
A little hardship would do my nephew no harm.
Filio shook his head as he watched the swordsman shuffle about the training circle, boards polished smooth by generations of soft fencing shoes.
He has fast hands, good instincts, but so much to learn.
He groaned at a wayward lunge.
I hope he might represent our city in the contest in Adua one day, but talent is useless without discipline.
He leapt up again.
Come on, you donkey, think about it.
You competed in the contest yourself. Filio gave her a sly grin as he sank back down.
Have you been checking up on me?
You lost to the future King Giselle in the semi-final. Took him to a last touch, as I recall.
You were there? You can't have been 10 years old.
8. A good liar sticks to the truth whenever possible. She had been 8 when their bout took place, but she'd been huddled in the blackness of a stinking ship's hold, shackled to a great chain with her family and a few score other convicts, all on their way to the prison camps of Angland, from which only she would return. She doubted that memory would have brought quite the same delight from Filio, though, his eyes shining at the memory of past glories. People are rarely made happy by all the truth.
The cheering crowd, the scrape of steel, the circle laid out before the grandest buildings of the Agriont, the proudest day of my life.
He was a man who admired the pomp and structure of the Union, a man who appreciated precision and discipline. That was why Vic had worn the full dress uniform of an Inquisitor exempt, boots buffed to a mirror gleam, hair parted with a ruler and ruthlessly bound back. Filio waved towards the flashing blades.
So you are a devotee of the beautiful science?
Who isn't? Though in fact she wasn't.
And I suppose you have come to gather votes.
His Majesty is extremely keen that Westport remain where it belongs, in the Union.
Or His Eminence is,
murmured Filio, eyes never leaving the swordsmen as they jabbed and parried.
And who else have you spoken to?
You are my first call. He was the fourth, but in Vic's experience you had to take care with the pride of moderately powerful men. They bruised much more easily than the truly mighty. Superior Lawson spoke of you in glowing terms, a senior alderman well-respected on all sides, someone who could be a unifying voice.
I'm flattered, of course, but the superior is too kind. If unity was simply a matter of the right voice, Westport might not be so terribly disunited.
Perhaps we can help bring your city together. I know you believe in the Union.
I do. I have all my life. My grandfather was one of those who brought us in to begin with.
Filio's smile faded.
But there are difficulties. King Giselle was a known quantity, but King Orso is young.
Filio winced as his nephew gave a showy flourish of his steels,
and has, by reputation, a surfeit of all the young man's faults. Your bungling in the wars against Styria was far from helpful. And then we have Solomio Shudra.
Filio clicked his tongue.
Have you heard him speak?
Briefly.
so persuasive, so compelling, so very, what's that word, charismatic, loved as only politicians free from power and therefore from disappointment ever can be. He's brought a lot of people around to his way of seeing things. The union side have no one in his class, all rather stodgy. But then it's difficult, isn't it, to make a passionate argument for what you already have? So boring, whereas the delightful alternative, a bouquet of promises, a sack full of dreams, a glorious ship of fantasies, undamaged by collision with actually getting anything done. So His Majesty can count on you to vote the right way? I wish I could give you an uncompromising union, yes. But I fear for now,
Filio scrunched up his face with distaste,
I can only go so far as the traditional Styrian, perhaps. Here in Westport, at the crossroads of the world, balanced between the Gurkish and the Styrians and the Union, we have been obliged to make an art of compromise. I have not lasted so long in the politics of the city by sticking too closely to any one set of principles.
Principles are like clothes, said Vic, straightening her jacket. You have to change them to suit the audience.
Precisely so. In due course, perhaps we can discuss my price for wearing one set of colors or the other. But it would be folly to pick a side too early. I might put myself on the losing one.
Vic supposed she could hardly blame the man. If she'd learned one thing in the camps, after all, it was that you stand with the winners. Then we should talk again, as the future takes shape. Vic stood, ignoring a sudden twinge through her bad hip, snapped her heels together, and gave a stiff bow. Filio looked rather pleased with it, but not pleased enough to promise his vote.
I hope so. But let us not waste each other's time until we are sure of our arithmetic. Ah!
He sprang up as his nephew's heels scuffed the edge of the circle.
Watch your back foot, you fool! Precision!
A rare breeze washed through Westport's public gardens, smelling of resin, flowers, and spice from the market over the wall. It made 100 varieties of foliage flap, rustle, and whisper. It flung a cloud of spray from the fountain in which the bright spring sun made a short-lived rainbow. Then a shadow fell across Vic.
Might I sit?
A broad-shouldered woman stood over her, dressed in loose linens in the southern fashion. Dark-skinned, strong-featured, with a fuzz of clipped grey-black hair.
I'm afraid I don't speak Styrian,
said Vic in common. Half a lie. She could make herself understood, but might not catch every nuance, and in negotiations as delicate as these, she couldn't risk a mistake. That, and she preferred to be underestimated. The woman sighed.
How typical of the union authorities to send a negotiator who cannot even speak the language.
I thought this was the crossroads of the world, where all tongues are spoken. You must be Dieppe Mazolia.
And you must be Victorine Dan Teufel.
I have that misfortune.
Vic had reckoned the aristocratic overtones of her full name, however awkwardly it fit her now, would suit this meeting best. Mazolia was said to be a hard-headed woman of business, so Vic had chosen to present herself as a practical Aduan lady on a trip abroad. Hair neatly braided, coiled and pinned. Top button left undone for a hint of relaxed approachability. It had been a while since she wore a skirt, and she felt no more comfortable in it than she did in her name. But then, feeling comfortable is a luxury spies are better off without.
How do you like the public gardens?
Asked Mazolia.
Beautiful, if a little thirsty. They were a gift to the city from a childless heiress to a vast merchant fortune.
Mazolia took her time arranging her long body on the bench.
She travelled the circle of the world, hoping to gather one of every kind of tree that God has made. She waved towards a towering fir, its lower branches entirely bare, its upper ones still clinging to a few dry needles. Sadly, not everything flourishes in our climate. And she glanced at Tallow, wilting in servant's livery, blotchy face beaded with sweat. It had been a bad idea to bring him. Vic knew she was better off alone. A lesson learned fresh in the camps, with every family member gone in the frozen ground. Her father, shivering, lips turned blue, shortened fingers turned black. Her mother, always asking what she'd done to deserve this, as though deserve had anything to do with it. All the sweat and pain it had taken to get that medicine for her sister, turning up with the bottle gripped tight to find her stiff and cold under the threadbare blankets, her brother still holding her hand. Only the two of them left, Vic and her brother, his big sad eyes just like Tallow's. You'll never hold up someone who can't swim for themselves. In the end, they'll drag you down with them. Mazzolia sighed, stretching one arm across the back of the bench. But I dare say you have not crossed the Circle Sea to discuss trees. No, to discuss the forthcoming vote. People here talk of little else, a momentous decision, but not one that you and I can take any part in. Women cannot be aldermen after all. Vic snorted. Women might not sit in the assembly, but they can still control the men who do. You have at least 5 votes in your pocket. Mazzolia shrugged her heavy shoulders. 6, possibly 7. I wonder if you might be persuaded to cast them for the Union. I might be, but not easily. I had one grandparent from Yashtavit, one from Sikur, a 3rd from Ospria, and a 4th from the Old Empire. I am welcome, or perhaps equally unwelcome, at 5 different temples in the city. I sometimes forget which version of God I am supposed to be praying to. In other nations, I would be called a mongrel. In this mongrel city, I am the norm. She smiled out at the yellow lawns, where people of every shape and color walked, sat, chatted, in the shade of every strange and wonderful tree God had made. A merchant in fabrics cannot afford to take a narrow view. My business stretches across the circle of the world. Suljuk silks and Gurkish linens, imperial cottons and woolens from the north. Not to mention all those fine new textiles spooling from the mills of the Union. Not to mention those. It would be a shame for a merchant in fabrics to be cut off from the largest market in the world. There would be frustrations, of course, but like water, commerce always works through the cracks in time, and becoming a part of Styria would offer its own opportunities. I understand the Serpent of Talons can be a domineering mistress. Mazzolia's turned to snort. As several Union generals have discovered to their cost. But when people are willing to compromise, she can be reasonable. Look how the citizens of Talons have prospered under her rule. And I rather like the idea of a woman in charge, don't you? Even a domineering one. We women really should do everything we can to work together. Or should we do exactly what the men do, and put sentiment to the side and follow the greatest prophet? Mazzolia smiled ever so slightly. Fancy that. You speak Styrian after all. I hope His Eminence sent an unsentimental sum of money along with you. Something better. Vic flicked open the letter and held it out between 2 fingers. The signature of Archlector Glockter lurked at the bottom, the lethal punchline. Trade rights once controlled by the Guild of Mercers, managed by His Majesty's Inquisition for these last 30 years. His Eminence is prepared to cut you in quite handsomely. Mazzolia took the letter and weighed every word. Vic didn't rush her. She closed her eyes and tipped her face towards the sun, breathed in the perfumed air. So rare, she had a moment to just sit. A nice, neat bribe. Mazzolia lowered the letter. Well judged.
I understand that here in Westport you like to be honest about your corruption.
I take it all back. You are positively fluent.
Mazzolia rocked her weight forward and stood, casting Vic into shadow again.
I shall consider your offer. Don't take too long. We women really should do everything we can to work together.
Vic nudged the over-heavy drapes aside to peer into the street. The sun was setting on a largely wasted day, a muddy flare above the maze of mismatched rooftops, the thirsty treetops, the puffing chimneys, the spires of 100 temples to 12 versions of the Almighty. She wondered if it helped to believe in God, whether it was reassuring or terrifying to look at all this shit and know for sure it was part of some grand plan. Vic pressed her thumb into her aching hip as she watched the candles being lit at some Thondish shrine, the lights twinkling in the windows, the bobbing torches of guides who led foreigners to Westport's best hostelries, best eateries, best back-alley muggings. The low murmur of voices passed the door, a coquettish giggle tinkling off down the hallway. Tallow frowned around the room. It was an idiot's idea of how a palace might be decorated, all velvet and peeling gilt.
What kind of arsehole arranges to meet in a brothel?
One who likes whores and making people uncomfortable, said Vic.
Sanders Rossimish, by all accounts, loved both. A strutting loudmouth, but one who'd voiced support for the Union in the past, and a vote was a vote. People often say that bullies should be stood up to, but Vic usually found it more productive to let them bully her. That was why she'd made a rare visit to a dressmaker in the hope of looking as feminine and yielding as possible. Hair down and combed with oil in the Westport style. She'd even worn perfume, fate's helper. The one thing she'd refused was high shoes. In her line of work, you never knew when you might have to run for your life. Or kick someone in the face.
Fuck these things, she grunted, hooking a finger into her corset and trying vainly to wriggle into a comfortable position.
Despite being made to measure, it fit her incredibly badly. Or perhaps it was cut to fit the woman people would like her to be, not the one she was. She wondered what Sybalt would have said if he'd seen her dressed like this. I wish I'd met you sooner, maybe. Things might have been different. And she'd have said, you didn't, and they're not. And he'd have given her that weary smile of his and said, you're a hard case, Vic. And he'd have been right.
She caught herself missing him at the oddest times, missing the warmth of him, the weight of him in her arms, the weight of his arms around her, missing having someone she could touch. But Sybalt cut his own throat when she betrayed him. Thinking about what he might have done was a waste of time. She let the drapes fall and turned back into the room, caught Tallow frowning at her, as if at a puzzle he couldn't quite find the answer to.
Do you have to keep staring? She snapped.
Sorry.
And he shrank back like a puppy got a kick.
It's just you look...
absurd?
Different. I guess.
Don't forget it's the same woman underneath, the one who's got your sister for a hostage.
Not likely to forget that, am I?
He snapped, a hint of sullen, useless anger showing. Even that reminded her of her brother. The look he used to have when he told her they had to help people, and she told him they had to help themselves. That wounded righteousness.
Why are you even here?
You know why. The Union's weak, enemies everywhere. If we can't hold on to what we already have...
I'm asking why you care a shit. Sent you to the camps, didn't they? If I was you, I'd laugh while the Union sunk in the fucking sea. Why are you here?
Her mouth twisted to spit the answer. Because she owed a debt to His Eminence.
because blackmail and betrayal was the only profession she'd ever excelled at, because you stand with the winners. She had half a dozen answers to hand. It was just that none of them were any good. Truth was, she could have done anything. Run off to the far country, like she and Sybalt had always joked about. But the moment His Eminence said Westport, she'd started packing. She was still standing there, mouth half open, but nothing quite coming out, when the door swung wide and Rossamish strode in. He hadn't made quite the effort that she had. He wore a dressing gown, left carelessly open to the waist, and apparently nothing else, a slice of hairy belly and chest on display.
"Sorry to keep you waiting,"
he blustered, not sounding sorry at all. She forced out a smile.
"No need to apologize. I know you are a busy man."
"You're right. I was busy fucking." Keeping that smile was an effort.
"Congratulations." "I would like to get back to it, so let us be brief. Westport will be joining Styria. We share a coastline and a culture. One cannot argue with geography and history. I intend no disrespect."
A phrase people only use when they intend as much as possible.
"Disrespect doesn't bother me," she said, giving her voice the slightest edge, "but it might bother the Archlector."
"There was a time when men would soil themselves at the mere mention of the cripple." Rossamish sneered over at her as he poured himself a glass of wine.
"But the Serpent of Talens is the power in Styria now. Makato has bound Styria together, while the Union splits at the seams. Nobility and government at each other's throats. And these breakers."
Disrespect didn't bother her, but that he'd rub her face in it with his brothel and his dressing gown, knowing who she worked for, that was a concern. Seemed he was convinced the Styrian faction would win, was trying to win their favour by humiliating the Union's representative.
"One cannot have great growth without a little pain," said Vic. "The Union's industry is the envy of the world. Westport would be cutting herself off from her rightful place in the future. I've already spoken to several like-minded—" "That bitch Mazolia! Ha! I hear Shudra already brought her back to his side. Better bribes than yours, I dare say. That's the thing about women. They think with their cunts. Anything that doesn't involve a cunt, they should have no opinion on. Fucking and babies, that's all."
"Don't leave out the monthly bleed," said Vic. "It's a more versatile organ than men give it credit for." She rarely allowed herself the luxury of disliking a person any more than liking one. Either could be a weakness. But this bastard was testing her patience. Rossamish bristled, annoyed his ham-fisted coarseness hadn't thrown her. He swaggered over, puffed up with scorn.
"I hear Makato is sending Casimir Danschenk to the city."
"I don't jump at shadows. Perhaps I'll panic when he gets here."
"He may already have arrived."
He leaned close so she could see the tiny specks of sweat on the bridge of his nose.
"They say he not only kills those he is sent for, but eats them."
Damn, she regretted the dress now. She was starting to wish she'd worn a full suit of armour.
"I wonder what he would eat first. Your liver, maybe?"
He leered over at Tallow.
"Perhaps he would start by butchering your errand boy."
And suddenly, all she could think of was the look on her brother's face, so hurt and so surprised when the practicals stepped from the shadows. Rossamish gave a little hoot of shock as Vic's fist smashed into his face. She'd had her brass knuckles hidden behind her, but they were on her fist now. He clutched at the curtains as he stumbled back, blood flooding from his broken nose. She punched him in the side of the jaw with a sick crunch, and he fumbled his glass, spraying wine over both of them. Her knuckles caught him across the top of the head as he fell, tearing the curtains down with him. He hunched in a ball, gasping and spluttering, and she put her knee on his shoulder and rained down punches on any part of him she could reach,
She lost count of the blows. Someone caught her arm, nearly dragged her over. Tallow wrestling her back.
You fucking kill him!
Vic tore free, breathing hard. Her dress was wine-stained, her arm was blood-spotted. Her hair was tangled across her face, and she dragged it back, oil between her fingers. It wasn't a style well-suited to beating a man. Rossamish whimpered, still curled in a ball. Tallow stared at him with those big, sad eyes.
What'd you do that for?
She hadn't even thought about it, hadn't weighed the risks or the consequences, hadn't even considered where to hit him or how to make sure he couldn't hit back. If he'd been a tougher man, things could have gone very badly wrong.
Before you brush off His Eminence, Master Rossamish, you should consider what you owe.
Her voice was harsh now. Slum debt collector rather than city lady. She tossed the paper Glockter had given her onto the floor by his knees.
7,000 scales and change to the banking house of Valant and Bulk. They don't take their friendship with the Union as lightly as you.
She nudged the paper towards him with one sensible boot, and he cringed as it brushed his bare leg.
His Eminence has arranged for them to call in the loan. They'll take your houses. They'll take your whores. Never mind Schenkt. They'll have your fucking liver before they're done.
Maybe some bullies need to be bullied after all. She leaned down over him, hissing the words.
You'll vote our way, you understand? Vote our way, or we crush you like a tick. I'll vote your way,
he blubbered, holding a trembling hand over his head. The little finger was broken sideways.
I'll vote your way.
Vic stalked off up the darkened street in a manner not at all suitable for her wine-stained dress. The ache in her clenched fist settled to a cold throbbing, the ache in her stiff hip getting steadily worse. Old injuries, a lifetime of them. Tallow hurried to catch her up.
Guess you can't say he didn't ask for it.
Silence.
If you'd left it much longer, I might have punched him myself.
Silence.
I mean, he might not have noticed, but I would have punched him still.
It was a mistake, growled Vic. You can't change the fact the world's full of assholes. You can only change how you deal with them.
He gave her a weak grin.
So you're not carved from wood after all.
She winced as she worked her sore fingers.
But them sure my hand isn't. Could be worse. Now folk here'll know what I've never doubted.
He gave her a stronger grin.
That you're the wrong woman to mess with.
She kept her face hard. It never ended well for the people she smiled at.
Truth is, we're making no progress. 2 weeks left, and we've lost more votes than we've gained. Solomeo bloody Shudra's too good at this.
She rubbed absently at her bruised knuckles.
We have to take him off the board.
Aye, but...
Tallow leaned close to whisper.
You kill him, everyone'll turn against us. Lawson said so.
Whatever it costs, said Vic. That's what His Eminence told me.
Tallow had that worried look again.
Easy to say for him who won't be paying.